Welcome to Minority Corner, where we take an introspective look at the world through an intersectional lens. I'm James, he, him, his. I'm a queer, political, actor, activist, comedian, Cancerian, self-proclaimed, sexy blurred. That's a black nerd. And each week, I'm joined in the corner by another fabulous minority where we tackle the news, pop culture, politics, media, history, and more, all with a little self-care and self-love sprinkled throughout.
And I'm Aneke Fitz-Clark, the co-creator of this damn podcast. And I'm back. She, her, right? That's it. She
that's
and
it.
Her.
Yep,
there's not a third it. One? Is there a past tense? Herses? Anyways, I'm a librarian. If you bitches have been listening to past episodes, you know who I am. I'm happy to be back.
We've also got...
Hi, I'm Ben Randall, he, him. I am a theater director based in New York. My origin story is born in a theater, raised in a club. I'm someone you want on your trivia team if the questions are politics, theater history, or Madonna. Follow me on Ben Randall Theater, that is a D-L-E, and theater with a T-R-E. At Instagram, or benrandall.com.
Everything old is new again. We are going back in time to check in and see how did the last pandemic affect Black people. Spoiler alert, not well. No, it did not. As we look into the pandemic of 1918, not the Spanish flu, as it has mistakenly been called, we'll discuss why. It's a history lesson that examines once again how pandemics can bring out a country's racism and how Black people endured, overcame, and persevered here in America. It's a tale as old as time. And yet, 100 years later, are we just repeating the same mistakes, especially when it comes to the Black community, who are disproportionately being affected, by the 2019 pandemic? What lessons can be learned from the pandemic of 1918? Okay, so before Joe Biden picks his VP, Ben Randall is back to help us speculate in essentially a fantasy football here. Oh, the possibilities. And does it need to be a Black woman specifically? Should it be a Black woman? And also, find out just why I hate Steve Urkel so much. Ugh, and there was another police killing of an unarmed Black person, this time Breonna Taylor, 26 years old. Stick around at the end. I give my thoughts and some breaking news updates. Let's learn, laugh, and play right here on Minority Corner. How many licks does it take to get to the center of the... You know what? I just took a bathroom break.
Yes.
And that's my song because of our corner that we did way
yeah,
back when
the
before
songs.
The world paused.
Mm-hmm.
I sing How Many Licks. Excuse me. Corona.
That was like simpler times.
A different lifetime
that was
ago.
Simpler times yeah. to be like, oh, wash your hands, guys. Tee hee hee hee.
Tee hee hee. What song will you sing?
I know. Now
cut
it's like.
You.
I'm going on my regulation walk with my mask on to get some sun on my face before I go back into the...
Put your mask on! People getting shot at the Costco.
God.
It's nuts. So I was really excited to talk to you specifically about
because
you know how we love to go back into a time capsule. So
yes.
We're going back in time.
Okay.
And we always like to go back in time and also look at, like, you know, everything old is new again.
Yes.
We have to learn from the mistakes of the past.
Word.
And also, as we go back in time, how did it affect Black people?
I mean, that's my first interest.
Always like to check in.
I'm
so,
like, oh, yeah, that the 20s were cute, but what's going on with Black people?
Yes. And what happened 2 years before the 20s hit?
Okay.
There was a pandemic.
Yep.
So... First and foremost, just so we all are on the same page, plagues and epidemics and pandemics, they're nothing new. They've been around for 10,000 plus years. They're always going to be around. So
yep.
I think one of the biggest things that we can take away from this is being prepared for the next
Hello.
One. Hello. It's one of the things I hope we come out.
We be germy.
You know?
That's just the human's plight is germs.
Yep. germs and they'd be killing. Mm-hmm. And so what I hope is I would come out of this underneath the Weekend at Bernie's presidency. You know that carcass that we're going to throw around and put in that chair?
The Band-Aid before the sutures, the burning coach that we got to hop onto.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That thing that we're doing. Yeah. Our progressive train that's leaving the station. Yeah. So I hope that there'll be more infrastructure and money and resources put around pandemic response. There will be underneath that administration. I could guarantee it. There would not be underneath, Goof Troop.
That's a nice way of putting it. Goof Troop. A better troop is.
You know what? It's actually
those
offensive
motherfuckers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's true. Because you know what? It's offensive to Goofy. I don't like Goofy, but I don't hate him.
I don't mind him.
Goofy
He's
was
there.
Always annoying.
He's all right.
He was like a Steve Urkel. I hate someone who's coming up and stepping on things and just, dominoes-ing all the decorations I put up.
Who are you hanging out with? Who can't control their bodily functions? Get them to a hospital.
I was 8 years old and Steve Urkel made me clutch my pearls all the time.
Yeah, well, he was supposed to be a one-off character. They kept his clown ass around.
I would much more interested in the Winslows. And maybe Judy would have still never had to go up to the basement and go do porn. Think about that, Steve. Okay.
A lot to unpack. Let's put a pin in that. Save it for another day. All right. So
I want to go back to 1918, to the so-called Spanish flu, but I want to strike that term from the record, never to be used again, because the Spanish flu didn't originate in Spain.
No, it didn't.
No, it did not.
Do you know why it's called the Spanish flu?
So I do, and we're going to talk about it.
I'm going to not be a librarian. I'm not going to librarian your corner, sorry.
And I'm literally going to tell you everything that you already know. Okay. But
the listeners don't.
They don't. So again, you have that fear it's going to seem very similar, fear driven by propaganda and censorship and lies were a very powerful part of the spread of the pandemic of 1918. Mm. People were often misled, often deliberately by officials. I'm already oh my God, this sounds familiar.
Sounds hella familiar.
Newspapers were censored, and the reason it is the Spanish flu is because of the censorship. So remember, you've got the World War One is
the Great
right
War,
now, which is also wild. At least we don't have another. I cannot imagine dealing with a pandemic and a world war at the same time.
And no antibiotics.
And no Netflix. We can't argue about Kenya Barris. What are
we
doing?
Not everybody has a phone. Literally, it's not cute to be doing sourdough. It's you got to do sourdough.
It's so right. When you got to try to make it work to feed your babies. It's rough. And during the war, Spain was a neutral country. They were I'm not getting involved in this. Y'all figure it out. And it didn't censor its news reports as rigorously as some other countries were doing. Some of the warring countries did. So Spain, España, was one of the first to report a massive epidemic. It came out of Madrid in the spring of 1918.
Good, keeping it real.
They were just oh, this thing is happening. And meanwhile, it's London and France. They've got, it's kicking off over there too. And that's the reason it was reported by Reuters in London that Madrid was under a massive epidemic. So it also fucking sucks for Spain because they're just trying to they're keeping out of this war. They're listen, we can't be into this.
They are being the truth, open, free press, and then they get blamed for it just because they weren't fucking trying to keep a smiling face on for the war.
Right.
Idiots.
Yes. I mean, listen, and I mean, also I know someone's going oh, what about when, Spain murdered a bunch of Jews? Yes.
Okay,
that's
fucked up,
but
too.
We're not talking about that in this moment. But don't worry, I got my eyes on that. I'm side-eyeing Spain for that.
Everybody's fucked up at one point.
Yes, that's true. There's the title of the show. Thank you. So, England and France, they had the flu before Spain, but they were keeping it out of the papers because they wanted to avoid damaging morale because they were in the middle of this war. Mm. So that's the reason it was called the Spanish flu. Fun fact, Brazilians called it the German flu.
Oh.
But the Senegalese called it the Brazilian flu.
Everybody's just pointing a finger.
And ooh, the polls.
You.
And the polls called it the Bolshevik disease. So wow, they didn't even call it a flu. They went for lot. It.
They went. They're like, yeah, let's.
Oh my gosh. But it's actually believed that it actually probably came from the U.S. in the South.
Ew, we nasty over here. It came from us.
Yes, there is theories and beliefs. And that's the thing about with, you know, epidemics and pandemics. It spreads and happens so fast. I think
I
personally feel like we waste time getting into that. And you can also see that Trump.
Yes, I agree.
And the motherfucker troop, boof troop. They're trying to rev up this whole entire, because they literally, like, you know, his numbers are decreasing even amongst his own constituents. But what works well for him is if he has an enemy. So before it was, you know, Mexicans, and now he's trying to make it the Chinese, which is also going to backfire against him because he's friends with all these billionaires over there. So
yeah, it makes no sense. It's so stupid.
Good luck. And he's letting his people die. So there we go. And, you know. So, influenza of 1918. Let's talk about the numbers. So, infected about 500 million people worldwide.
Jesus.
So, and it killed, the deaths range from anywhere from 50 million to 100 million. Again, ooh, reporting is globally. And so reporting is kind of hard, too, because someone maybe didn't directly die of this, but the complications with it. Yeah. And also just, like with anything, the reporting, if you're in different, you know, countries, the reporting is just kind of, so it's an estimate of 50 million to 100 million. But even at the lowest of 50 million, that's it's a lot. It killed about 675,000 Americans.
A lot.
And I will say that's a lot. And you're looking at these numbers, I will say, snaps to, thankfully, just the way that the world is now, we won't get to numbers of that large, you know? Yeah. So, I mean, that is a blessing that is happening, but still too many Americans and human beings across the world are dying from it. Here's the thing.
Yeah.
This will not surprise you, but it mainly affected, this might surprise you. This mainly affected folks who were 20 to 40, which is
so
different.
It lowered the life expectancy by 12 years.
Wild. Because if you're looking for, you know, with COVID, we're seeing, you know, 60 plus or higher. Again, anybody of different ages is at risk, but people who are 60 and higher are even more at risk. But I thought it was so interesting. But this flu was age 20 to 40. So you just really don't
it's
know.
It's crazy. Decimated the workforce.
Yes, absolutely. And so Black folks often were left to fend for themselves. This will not surprise you. They had substandard care from their hospitals.
But wait, James, before we dive into that part.
Yeah.
I'm now realizing that time period really fucked over the young and middle-aged adult population, because not only was the flu killing everybody of that age, so was the war.
The war. Oh, my God. I think, too, when we have to kind of look back at, like, what that generation went through, talk about generational trauma, and then they shortly after had the depression, you know,
no wonder the 20s were roaring. People were like, fuck,
the world's ending, give me that drink,
I need to be a flapper.
And then to make matters worse, the U.S. was trying to do like prohibition at that time. It was like, now is not the time.
People
give
need
me
to
more
drink.
Give me more drugs. Give me more alcohol.
Drink.
What are you
people
doing?
In the 1920s, who were adults, had been through so much fucking shit. Give that person some gin.
Yeah. Because, I mean, what's creeping right around the corner? It's
Great
the
Depression.
Great Depression. And then what's right after that?
World War II.
Like,
Jesus.
It is. Yeah. So talking just about like the trauma of things, like I just don't even understand. And then add on if you are Black or a woman or anything.
We
like
are
that.
Soft, lammy people, man. We're like
that's
little lambs, in some soft grass right now.
Complaining at, like, I have to stay home and I'm watching Netflix or something. Or like even the worst of our situations, there are people who are having it really bad because of unemployment. But it's it's not... It's not this.
It's not
1918.
I could see my friends in a computer box. Like, what? This is...
We're doing okay, y'all. We're doing okay. I'm going to teach y'all a dance class Saturdays at 2 p.m. We're doing okay. So Yeah, thank you for putting those together. You're right. So black folks were also forced into close quarters, sometimes in basements for like hospital care when they were to get it. Or sometimes only admitted to black-only hospitals because you had segregation. Or even sometimes just in segregation was only relegated to the South. Like they're just, you know, black people everywhere. Weren't welcomed. And yes. And and then in death, black bodies were still neglected. In Baltimore, a white sanitation department employees refused to dig graves for black flu victims after the city's only black cemetery, Mount Auburn, ran out of space.
Oh, my God.
So, and the mayor had to appeal to the Department of War, which is now the Department of Defense, rebranding. Yeah. So the mayor had to appeal to them for them to do something, and then they finally sent black soldiers to come to dig the trenches. So
can't your racism take a pause during a crisis? Like, what the fuck?
If you know what, you don't have to look too far to see the answer to that is no, because we're seeing. I could just look at the news report and be like, no, and the answer is no.
It revs up a little bit.
Doesn't matter what time increases. It is. You think like after 100 years we would be further along? No.
So, no, because these are the descendants of those assholes passing it down.
Yeah. Apple tree. Mm-mm. So I want to connect this to also to World War One. So because you can't really talk about this pandemic without World War One, because it also because of World War One. Some of the first, some of the first cases that were identified were in the U.S. Like I was saying, right? Mm-hmm. So it really should be called the American flu of 1918. So we don't like the name of that, do we?
No.
So we need to stop naming it things. Don't it be calling
just be
it that.
It should be the human flu.
Or like, 1918. I'm going with the epidemic of 1918 or the pandemic of 1918 or the flu of 1918.
Good.
Yeah. Pandemic. Putting it a year. Yeah.
1918 so, pandemic.
Yes, that's it exactly. And so soldiers were living in close quarters in army barracks before heading to Europe to join the war.
Just
and that's where some
on
of the
each
first...
other.
Yes, and in close quarters. This is back in 1917. And Vanessa Northington Gamble, a medical doctor and professor of medical humanities and American studies at George Washington University.
Damn, a woman doctor at the time, she'd be doing it. Like, for reals.
Yeah, she was like, so, you know, in terms of your race, your gender, where you live, it will have a major role. Well, she's a doctor from today. And she was referencing.
Okay. Still, she's doing it. But I mean,
she's still doing it.
She's
not
still
as impressive.
Doing it. She's still doing it. But a 1918 woman doctor at the time?
Yeah,
I would have
no,
been.
No,
like,
no, no, no. But she was referencing that pandemic because she was looking at it. If you look at that pandemic and looking at this one, what history tells us is that depending on your race, your gender, where you live, will have a major role in how you experience COVID-19. And so, yeah, it's just like if you look at 1918 influenza pandemic, you can see that there were serious issues around race and class and racial and social inequities. Yeah, and actually it's funny because that's what, you know, Kamala Harris and her Black Town Hall meeting for Joe Biden without Joe Biden. That's what they were talking about. Just the best kind of town hall that we need. And name only.
Yes.
Branding.
I know. It should just be the Biden presidency, but like no talking Joe Biden.
Oh, yeah. Yep, that's it. That's it. You take a nap. We got this. We got this. So again, I mean, you have these people who are in these close quarters. And then they get sent off to Europe and they're sick. And there also is this culture of like, you know, tough up and be, you know, we just have this, you know, sick culture in America. Mm-hmm. Like if you're sick, you're expected to keep working. That's just what
exactly.
We have.
Which is fucked. You need to take a breather, take a break.
To save your life and the lives of others. Like you should. I think that's what the other thing is that the flu was always a very serious thing and we weren't treating it as such. And people were getting sick and working through it and getting other people sick. And it's like, no, we need to restructure how we care about human beings, because if we work everyone into death, then who's going to work?
Exactly. Because the rich people don't want to.
you all don't want to, so mm-mm. Okay, I next want to focus in on Chicago, because Chicago kind of is going to show us how the rest of the country kind of responded. And it was fucked up when it comes to the Black community. Oh, no, it's So let's take a look at Chicago, Chi-town. All right. So, Black folks were blamed for Black folks were blamed for the rise of the pandemic in the U.S. So,
not surprised.
John Dill Robertson. He was the city's commissioner.
That sounds like a
racist name. You're right. He was the city's commissioner of public health. And so he is going to be a major factor in what the racism that's about to take place that I'm going to tell you about, as well as the media. Surprise. The Chicago Tribune. Surprise. Here's some headlines. On March 5th, 1917. X-tree, read all about it. Rush of Negroes to city starts health inquiry on July 8th, 1918.
Fun. That's not going to cause a fervor at all. That's not going to freak out some podunk white people. No, not that's not going to fuel racism. Whoever that journalist is needs to... I'm so mad at journalism sometimes.
Yeah, no, as you should be. Keep that, you know, people are looking for something to be angry about. That's something to be angry about.
Yeah, exactly.
you know. Oh, God. Okay, July 8, 1918. X-tree, half a million darkies from Dixie swarmed to the north to better themselves. Read all about it.
Some racist thought that they were so clever.
This is a terrible headline.
With some darkies from Dixies. That's our ska band, James. We're gonna
Darkies from Dixie. Oh my God. I'm kind of in love with it.
Nobody's gonna want to say it. They're gonna be like, what band are you gonna
darkies
see tonight?
Dixie. DD.
And then we're gonna be like, say it.
Say it. Say it. Our name.
Our music too the good.
They call they call the radio. Hey, I like that new song from, you know, there's that band, they're really good. We know the one.
Yeah, I know.
don't have to say it. That's how dope we are. You're not gonna say our name. Okay, so the paper went on to just do a lot of racist fear-mongering. And so if we look under the hood of what was happening in Chicago, Black folks were often limited to only parts of the city. They were overcrowded neighborhoods. Yeah. You also had white folks who had just become slumlords charging rents about 15 to 25% higher to Black people who are already making less money as it is.
Geez, that doesn't sound familiar as to right now.
Yeah, it does. And actually, you can even look at, you know who is really good at being a slumlord?
Who?
Jared Kushner. There is an episode on Netflix, Dirty Money, that is all about him being a slumlord in, I think it's in the Baltimore, Maryland region. It's just so disgusting. And you, because I'm like, who is this kid? And they do an hour of Jared Kushner, and you're like, this fuckboy.
Yuck.
Yeah. So, put a
pin. I mean, it's like you look at Oakland right now, like they show the COVID-19 cases in Oakland, and there's a high population concentration in the Black and Latinx communities.
See?
And then in the white communities, it's like a line. You go to the white communities and it's like not a lot. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, again, too, I mean, there are also, you know, the working class is a lot of these cities. The working class, it's not, you know, it's not just white Appalachian people who are also putting themselves at, you know, risk or whatnot. But it's, you know, Black and brown people who are out there doing the work, who are essential workers, who should, if this also should be showing us where our money should be going to these people that our society depends on.
We are resting on top of the backs of these people who are supporting our country, and we're literally allowing them to be exposed
and not showing any appreciation back. They should be loan forgiveness, bonuses, whatever it is that we need to do.
No rent until the pandemic is over. It's like, come on.
So the Chicago Tribune talked about the disease.
The old racist Chicago Tribune.
Cancel your subscription now. They talked about the disease similar to they kind of equated it similar to like the migration. So they would use terms like swarm of, like similar how we would hear about like swarms of migrants, you know, coming.
Or murder bees or murder hornets.
Yeah, so it's very similar. Everything old is new again about, you know, migrants coming to bring disease with them. Yeah. Like, it's just all the same. And it's very similar rhetoric that they were using back then that we were seeing now. Again, it gets racism. People to be angry and fearful towards something else as opposed to looking at, like, how the government
themselves.
Is responding. Yeah. And again, like, this disease doesn't care who you are, how you vote. Like, it will get ya.
You're a person. You're going to get it. Yep. Maybe.
So here's what led to some of the problems within actually how the Black community was able to even respond to it, because there was actually mixed messaging. So in November of 1918, the Cleveland Advocate had an article that said a Cleveland Advocate is a Black newspaper.
Oh, okay.
And they said, the article said, "Flu shuns us, says health doctor." So what? In the first wave, it actually wasn't really. So there was this misconception that Black folks were immune to it because Black folks were.
This is irresponsible on the other side.
I know. We have to take responsibility for it.
These fucking journalists, they have blood on their hands.
I know. So in the first wave, Black folks weren't actually really affected by it. So there's this notion or idea. But Black folks were also relegated and segregated to Black neighborhoods.
Oh, so they were we ain't.
So they were actually kind of, through racist laws, we actually protected. Were quarantined away from the disease, right? But that was just in the first year of the first wave of it. So there was a quote that the only year in the 20th century when Black people in the USA had lower influenza mortality than white people was in 1918.
Interesting.
Isn't that interesting? Because every year after that, we got it. We have a higher rate. Isn't that crazy? Yeah.
That's crazy.
So,
God damn it.
Yeah. So they were, eventually they still, though, after that was just the first wave, and they still were hit hard and but even in that time period, the Black healthcare system and social services available to Black folks were overwhelmed. Black hospitals were overwhelmed. Black nurses were overwhelmed. The National Urban League had volunteers go into homes and try to take care of people.
Getting infected while doing that.
Absolutely. I mean, because there's also, information is very slow to get out there. I doubt that there was, the government's not really helping. Black people were really left to their own devices to fend for themselves because they really lived in a separate, unequal country.
100%. Really did. Yep. People need to really understand that.
Yeah. Yeah. And so essentially Jim Crow laws were alive and well and disguised as something else in Chicago. And so again, when people want to finger point about just how racist the South is, no, just how racist the America is, because other cities would just disguise it as different things. So here's what really became really fucked up. Public health officials. Remember that Robertson guy?
Uh-huh.
He was the head of the public health. He led public health became essentially a de facto police force.
Oh,
so
cool.
Black folks were, their movement was limited.
Jesus!
They were quarantined to the ghettos of the South. And in 1917, his health department passed 75 regulations regulating where people could drink water.
Oh my God.
Does that sound familiar?
Yes.
Where children could play. And again, this is, you talk about Chicago on the South Side. And then you look at why certain places are. Like, again, this is the ramifications. Like, this is the roots of
this
what's
is the structure.
Yes, absolutely. So they regulated where children could play, mandatory reporting of flu cases. So you were obligated to self-quarantine to the Department of Public Health if you were sick. And then they would placard your house with a big red sign. Yeah.
Jeez.
That's terrifying. So it was disease stigmatization.
I know.
And then, it gets even worse. The public health department sent visiting nurses to find folks who were sick. And they did about 40,000 visits across the city. They could come into your house without permission and ask if you were infected. You want to talk about your rights being taken away?
Just busting through the door to be like, you sick?
You sick? What? Oh, I'm going to put this sign up on your house. Yes, and only to the Black community. Like, again, when I see those people protesting out in Oklahoma, like, this is not, this. You're what you're going through is not oppression. That's not, no. So, incredibly intrusive.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So it just bums me out how badly Black people and everybody, I mean, like other people of color and different minority groups too. But it's just like this story, we're talking about Black people.
Man, we've gotten it
treated so poorly.
Terribly. Not again, not subhuman. And I just, that's why it just amazes me. And I've always put this of like, you know, Black people are fucking magical because of all the shit that we as a people have continuously had to endure. Kidnapped from our homes, forced to work for hundreds of years, and then set free, but given everything, like what's everything
that freedom? What type of freedom is that?
Yeah, and then free into a world that where everything was set against you. You had were working against a system that wasn't, you know, that was working against you, and had to come up with everything yourself.
Jeez, the way that we have persevered and thrived and literally created the culture for this fucked up country.
Yeah.
Is insane. And to think that people still think Black people are trash is insane.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is disgusting. This is disgusting. Kind of also,
and it makes me think, like, I mean, Michelle Obama grew up in the South Side of Chicago, and I think, like, this is what her people persevered through.
Yeah.
And she was able to make it all the way to the White House in spite of all of this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So there was a hospital called Provident Hospital. It was for Black folks, but Black folks who could afford it. Because, again, there was no, you know, healthcare system. Mm-hmm. And this was the nation's first Black-owned and operated hospital. So snaps to it.
Yeah.
It was, I believe it was an offset from Howard University Medical School, which grew out of Freedman's Hospital in Washington and Meharry Medical College in Nashville. And they were instrumental in turning out Black physicians.
Ooh, find me a husband.
And getting Black nurses out there into the field too. And like always, in the face of adversity, Black people shine brightly given inadequate medical facilities.
Yup.
Black doctors and nurses face shitty treatment from the rest of the medical community and disrespect from the medical community. One point, public health department mandated everyone to wear a mask, and this group of Black Chicago ladies, I wish I had a picture of it, but they made some delicate lace exquisite jewel masks.
Make it cute, doing it nice. Yes. I hope they had another fabric behind the lace, otherwise that didn't do anything.
Not helpful.
But still...
Yes, it's like PPE, but make it fashion.
Yes, it's how we do things.
Fabulous, just fabulous. And despite, it's like we're going to make the best out of a shitty situation. Literally, lemonading. This is where the genesis of lemonade comes from. Thank you. Oh, God.
Just so, what we fucking do all the time. We get something shit, and then we're like, okay, how can we make this gold? Right, okay, great. We're going to make this gold, and then it's stolen from us.
And then it gets stolen from us. It is a cycle. So, Black folks, but I hope by us telling these stories, it'll get white people to stop doing that shit.
Yes.
Black folks had difficult... Black folks also had difficult... Black folks who also wanted to help fight... you know, in World War One, or even just the global pandemic of things, it was very hard for them to get involved. So Black folks went off to fight in World War One because they thought this would be a citizenship machine. Essentially, they were going to be like, "We're going to fight in World War One, fight for our country. We're going to get citizenship. We're going to be
they're already citizens, though. That's the dumb thing."
But they felt like they had to work like even harder to, that sort of recognition. And we all know what happened. No, that was not the answer.
Of course not.
Even though Black folks, you know, were some of the first to go to France, like the Harlem Hellfighters, which I know that we've talked about before, straight out of Harlem, went to go fight. So the American Red Cross, you know how they often do fuckery? Well,
here we go.
Back then was no different. So they dragged their feet in taking Black nurses until they had to. We're in the middle of a war, there's a pandemic, and they dragged their fucking feet. Mm-hmm. They had to create, so Black women had to create their own alternatives for volunteering because they wanted to help. They wanted to be a part. God. They weren't just going to sit by and do nothing. Like, this is, you know.
Which is a testament of strength of wanting to help. Because imagine going through all this shit and you still want to help this fucked up country. Instead of just being like, I'm going to let you fucking burn.
Good luck. I know. Can we go over to Hispaniola? What they doing over there? Can I get out?
Out of here. What's going on in Canada?
So they created their own. So nurses, nurses were also rejected from service abroad. They were only here at the home defense program. Eventually, Aneke, you'll be happy to know they were eventually allowed to come in and treat white soldiers because they eventually were running out. I guess they just didn't think that they were
because.
Like, you're dying. Like, don't you just need fucking help? Like, come on.
And you know they face so much racism when they're out there trying to help those white soldiers.
Yes. And this is the thing, too, that I don't want to see another World War One story and nary a black person in sight. I don't want to see it.
Exactly. Thank you.
Stories about white people in World War One. We were there too. Even black British soldiers and black British nurses and people of all different races. We were.
I'm glad that at least 1917 had some faces of color in there. Thank you, Sam Mendes.
You know I like to always peep in the background, and within the first 10 minutes, I was like, "Oh, black person, black person." Yep. Okay, we're there too. Okay,
you got me on that same train. I am now a background artist. Spotter as well, and I was like, good job, Sam Mendes.
You did a great okay, so on November 2nd, 1918, this is a very popular date for notes out of the Tribune, Olive Walker in Ohio was denied being able to help the Red Cross to fight the influenza pandemic at Hiram College when the dean found out her race. She had been approved. And then he was like, oh, is she black? Nope. Rescinded.
Like, people that much didn't want to be around black people. Like, that's so crazy to me. That's, like, never in my life would I be like, ew, I don't want to be around that person because they got curly hair. Like, what?
Well, especially when the world seems like it's falling apart. You've got a pandemic and a world war. Like,
and you're going to double ass down.
Yep, you're like, I'm going to hold on to my racism because that matters more to me than the lives of other people. So Lincoln Hospital and NYC would hire black nurses, but not doctors because white patients didn't want black doctors treating them. So it was this other, and this is in New York. So again, I need to point out that racism exists everywhere. So again, like a nurse's, which is kind of like a subservient sort of like, it could be seen as sort of, you know, but they wouldn't trust like a doctor who had, you know, to handle and lead their care.
Which set the structure for nurses being a majority of people of color and doctors being white.
Absolutely. Again, everything is purposely, there's no accidents here of when you look at how things are, why they are the way that they are. So
we're not saying nurses aren't valuable. We fucking love nurses.
Oh, they're not at all.
Amazing. Like, this is just the higher whatever.
Yeah, because all these black doctors who also weren't able to get work. And this, I mean, I saw this, you know, watching Grey's Anatomy, the head of the black doc, the old, I forget his name, Burke or something. No, not Burke. He was the bad one that got fired.
You know me,
Weber,
I did not watch
the guy who plays Richard, I know. Guy who plays Richard Weber, they do a flashback and he back in the 80s was, you know, like trying to treat people and be a surgeon. And they were like, I don't want this black doctor. And so, you know,
I would just be like, then you die. I don't care.
Roll the credits.
If you want to like roll the dice and not be treated by somebody just because you're racist, then maybe, you know what, take a pause on your time here. Like, really try and figure something out. Like, that sounds cold-blooded, but like, it's cold-blooded to not want to be treated because you're racist.
Yeah, and you're seeing similar things happen now with Asian Americans. There's been reports of Asian American doctors who people are being who are refusing treatment for them. It's just like
then die.
It makes my stomach turn. The xenophobia and racism that's happening, and it's sad because this was happening back then, and it's still happening now. And also, what's really frustrating and annoying, it's like, you know, you just, remember when we talked about the Moors. The Moors are the ones that helped Europeans stop dying of diseases because they were like, here's how to shower and change. And so it's so
OG
dumb for
black doctors.
Yes. And so it's just dumb that like black people are being blamed for this thing where it's like we at every corner have always been at the cutting edge to help mitigate this shit. Like, stop it. Y'all are being nasty. So in the midst of the 1918, here's a crazy thing. And so again, let's see what parallels this reminds you of. In the midst of the 1918 pandemic, Philadelphia hosted a massive parade to sell war bonds to pay for the American war effort, because the war is still happening. 20,000 people go out. Two days later, every hospital bed in Philly is filled.
Duh! Because it's fucking Mardi Gras over here. Like, what happened?
Yep, that's exactly it. Yeah. So
why are people like so stupid? This is happening. And like,
I'm done. So that's why I'm just like, oh, this is the thing that happens. Like, I guess I can't be surprised. I'm like, oh, this is what happens when there's a pandemic, that there are lies and racism and you know, bad media like Fox News out there. There are people who won't abide by the rules and regulations that happen. And this is what happens when there's a pandemic. These are the things that happen.
It just exposes human life as idiotic. It's just
some people will, yeah. And but snaps to those, because there are still people who did abide by everything and got involved and helped. So it's just like, this is this is how human beings respond, that some will respond in that way and some will respond in the way that will help us move things forward.
You're bringing attention that every group project that I've ever been in school is a microcosm of human population. There is usually one or two people that are supporting the whole thing, and the rest of everybody are idiots.
Yes.
Don't do shit.
Oh my God. Yes.
Either don't do anything or actively try to pull the whole thing down. It's like,
yeah. Oh, and the war machine was up and running so much that there was no concern for public health, that they were so interested in keeping the troops going to Europe that they kept filling the ships up with sick men.
Yuck!
And they were just, you know, floating coffins. They were just floating coffins on their way to, because again, they just had misplaced their priorities. So keeping an eye on the government of, it's like, we got to get Boof Troop out of there.
You know what the crazy part of all of this is, James?
Yeah.
We have computer boxes that we can literally see each other in real time and talk to each other with, right?
Yeah.
We have cars that are electric that we can drive around in.
Yeah.
We have multiple shows of people acting that are recorded that is beamed into our houses, right?
Yes.
We are literally, compared to 1918, living in a shiny future world.
Oh my God,
and yet it is
yes, I see where you're going with this.
Same.
Yep.
Some of the same, not some, pretty much all of the same themes.
All of the same themes. The amount of, I think it was in Georgia, it was like 80% of the deaths were black. 80%.
Where'd that 1918 donkey just dressed up in a fancy hat? That's all we now. Look,
in 100 years, what'd that donkey get? Oh, he got a hat. And the sparkles are like, oh, it's sparkly, but the sparkles are falling off. Like, oh, good for you, donkey. Here's another parallel that you're going to see that happened as well, which is kind of sad. Yeah. So in the Spanish city, Zamora, the local bishop, because the pandemic was happening and he was like, we need to pray this away. So he had nine consecutive days to honor Saint Rocco, patron saint of plague and pestilence. So I like the idea, but they had everybody gathered.
Nope.
Oh, it gets even worse. Churchgoers lined
up. Was kissing a part of it?
Yes. Churchgoers lined up to kiss the saint's relic.
Stop it!
And it went on record to have the highest death rate of any city in Spain. It was the highest in Europe.
Yeah, because they were licking each other, basically. I thought I was joking with my kiss joke.
Nope. They kiss of death, essentially, which is really sad. And again, awful. Like, I love the idea of what they were trying to do, but it's because they were trying to pray to the saint of plague and pestilence and then just spread it. So,
wow.
It's
dark.
Yes. So here's some lessons to learn from 1918 that we need to have mandatory public health measures.
Yes.
We need to have those. And containment is effective if people choose to comply.
Yes.
So, you know, we're seeing numbers that are if we do comply and if we don't, that it'll be just drastically different.
Right.
We'll get to get back to some sense of normalcy. Again, we don't need to return back to what we were doing, because what we were doing wasn't working in the way that we were living, meat consumption, environment, all that sort of stuff. But to get into that new world, we have to squelch this.
You know?
We also need to be able to trust in the that the authorities are acting in our collective interests. Mm-hmm. And there's mistrust. We have to make sure that people are being properly informed about the threat that they face. If either or both are missing, containment works less than well.
Yes.
And yeah. So, just looking back, NYC had a low death rate during the because they had good information that was going out. Mm. Even though they're being racist towards their doctors, previously the city had a 20-year campaign against tuberculosis.
Oh, so they were ready.
Yeah. Yeah. Although there was a theater owner in Times Square who praised folks for coming out to the Charlie Chaplin film.
Oh God, and this then, idiot.
Well, he died of the flu.
Oh no!
A few weeks later. So, and did you know that Donald Trump's grandfather died of the 1918 flu?
Really?
Yes.
Oh, Jesus.
Yes. And also people thought that like alcohol would protect them, or holy water, or elixirs.
I mean, back then they had excuses because they didn't have an internet box, which unfortunately we do. And people still think like, oh, okay, I'm going to inject myself with bleach. Like, it's like, come on.
Yeah. No, totally.
The parallels, so, and even just to bring,
I know, and even just today, that even if you take the pandemic out of it, that just looking at Chicago, because we looked at like how, like just looking at the discrepancies of how, you now we understand more about the South Side of Chicago,
right?
And you know, they say that if you just go 10 stops away from the Loop in Chicago, so like that main area in Chicago,
yeah,
if you go 10 stops away, your life expectancy goes down by 20 years.
See? Oh, man.
And right now with the pandemic in Chicago, they are black people are 15% of the population and 45% of the cases. So
that's
we're
insane.
Just seeing, we're literally repeating the same steps. The same things are happening. So I wanted to just take a look at how the pandemic affected Black people in 1918. Looks like the same as in 2020.
Man.
So,
I mean, that's good to hear, though. It's good to hear just how things change, but things stay the same.
And uh-oh. I found out from my aunt that on my dad's side, my great-grandmother said that they lost a lot of their family during the pandemic.
Really?
And they were living I think in the Ohio region.
Oh, wow.
So a good amount of my family had been lost to this.
Dang. I need to find out about my family because they were in New York, so maybe they were doing okay.
Maybe it was better taken care of there, but yeah, it's pretty wild. So,
man, thanks for sharing that with me, James. I'm glad to be back to get this information, even though it's annoyingly devastating, but it's good. We all need to know this shit because we forget. 100 years wipes away history. It's not oral tradition anymore. So,
yep. And so we got to get this shit out there. And also, too, any takeaway, stop calling it the Spanish flu. It just was the flu of 1918, because that shit probably originated in Kansas, is where they're thinking. So, and you don't want to call it Kansas. You don't want that name.
You don't want it. It's the 1918 pandemic. And we are now in the 2020 pandemic.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
These are real podcast listeners, not actors.
We took the identifying marks off this podcast. Just tell me your impressions.
It's really sexy.
My first thought is like Radiolab?
Definitely something popular.
Yeah, really popular. A hit show.
But funny too. Like, does Tina Fey have a podcast?
Or the Marx Brothers?
Yeah, is this podcast Radiolab, but hosted by the Marx Brothers?
And sexy, like Sade? It reminds me of Sade.
Exactly. And they're all riding in a BMW.
Close, but not quite. Take a look behind these panels. And then watch this rocket blast off into space.
Whoa.
Ooh.
And there's the pies we made you.
Oh.
Now, let's show you the podcast.
Oh. Wow, it was Jordan, Jesse, Go.
Jordan, Jesse, Go?
Hold on. Oh.
Whoa.
Ooh.
Oh my goodness.
That was 514 J.D. Power & Associates Podcasting Awards.
That was really scary.
But compelling.
I guess I should definitely subscribe to Jordan, Jesse, Go.
Yeah. I'd say so.
Jordan, Jesse, Go. A real podcast.
Do we have time to talk about BP, or is it over long?
Throw it in there. Is it worth, like, sometimes it does feel like a little too fantasy football. I have to stop myself from getting in these debates with people on Facebook of like, I don't know who it's going to be. Last time, did I think it was going to be Tim Kaine? No, like, I wasted so much time trying to guess who I thought the VP was going to be.
Well, the thing is, his name was in the mix last time. So it was just that, like,
really?
He wasn't one of the...
Okay.
So was Hinkenlooper. And yeah, so...
And Elizabeth Warren was on her shortlist, too.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. So this time, there is a shortlist. There's a longer list, too, that we don't know about. We have guesses as to what they are. Listen, headline is, this isn't happening till July.
Okay, so we can calm down.
We got some time.
Yeah.
So I think the most important thing about it is we need to not be waiting for this announcement to be starting to support Biden.
Mm-hmm.
If you're waiting for this announcement to be the reason why, well, it's going to be July before we even announce.
Yeah.
And it may not be who you pick because it's not your pick.
Yep.
It gets to be his pick.
Yeah.
And there's already lots of factions kind of forming among his own aides.
Yeah.
Among his own influencers and advisors of which faction he should represent on that ticket with him.
Totally.
But at the end of the day, it's going to be who he wants to lead with. He was a VP. He knows what it's like to be one. Mm-hmm. And he knows the role of it.
Yeah.
And he's not really, I don't think he's going to be picking somebody for optics alone.
Yeah.
He picks someone who he thinks can be president tomorrow.
Yeah.
And he knows that's how the public will be measuring that person.
Yeah.
And I think he's going to want somebody that he can delegate like crazy.
Yeah. Which I'm also really excited about too, is that I appreciate, like, I mean, Joe Biden's been around and he isn't so much about, he's not like a, you're not going to see like a Sarah Palin-esque, like, I got to try to win. Like, he's not going to go for one of those, and I appreciate it. And at the end of the day, every time I'm like getting in these debates with people, at the end of the day, I remind myself, I'm just excited because it's going to be a woman. I feel like we've won. Yay, woman, finally.
Correct. And so we know right now the short list includes Elizabeth Warren, Gretchen Whitmer, the governor of Michigan, Klobuchar, Kamala Harris, Stacey Abrams. We know those are on a list. We also know it could be the governor of New Mexico, it could be the senator from Nevada, it could be Val Demings from Florida.
Oh, yeah.
It could be the mayor of Atlanta was mentioned, Bottoms. And so it could be, there's a long, long list of people it could be. I think that we should mention that the committee starts May 1st.
Right.
And then they begin by vetting everybody, looking through all their monies, all their background checks.
Mm-hmm.
Then they interview them. Usually it's done in secret, but now it's probably going to be done by Zoom. But usually it's like, you know, in between rallies and things, or like meeting in airports.
Right.
To be on the DL. And like, then he's going to sit with it and he'll announce in July. So we're really far away from that. Yeah.
I am going to say something really unpopular. I'm going to say something so unpopular. Everyone's going to come after me on Twitter. I love Stacey Abrams. She's like my seventh choice for a vice president. And I say this because I love Stacey Abrams. I think if she wanted to be president, she should have ran. Like, I personally really do think it's an... And this is just how I always feel, is that I always think the VP, and this is just me, I always think the VP should be someone who ran for president because I think it's only fair. I think it pulls in a constituency of people who are already, they're excited, they're butthurt that it didn't work out, but now they're ready to jump back in. It's someone who, like, it takes a lot. You put your neck out when you run for president.
Yes.
They've been vetted through the media. They've been through the coals. They put in the fire, the time, the money, what they put through their family. So they're already there. And so to me, it's like, I would appreciate someone like a Kamala Harris or Elizabeth Warren because they've already put their neck out there. They already have a constituency. They said that they wanted the job. I think Stacey Abrams will absolutely be president one day. She didn't want it this go around. So see you in 2028.
I mean, I also hate to be this guy, but I, because I definitely heard people, I think quite rightly, being really excited that a black woman was being so open about what she felt she deserved and putting herself forward as being qualified to VP. BVP in the interview she gave recently. But I must admit, I turned to my boyfriend and I said, I promise you, if you and I are saying this, there exists one Biden aide who did not like that interview. And namely, the reason why I say this is not because it's wrong to put it forward. It's that there is a way to do it.
Yeah.
There is a way to do these things. And usually the way you do it is if you look right now and you watch Klobuchar, you watch Kamala, definitely.
Oof.
Kamala's in every interview, everywhere. And what is she doing? She's like forming, she's formed a ties with the DNC to be raising money for the presidential, for Biden. Then she's doing online fundraisers for all these different Senate seats.
Yeah.
So she's like building friends, building connections. This, by the way, is how you make, if there's such thing as a party elite, it's raising money for the party.
Yeah.
That will make other members of the party love you.
Yep.
It's because they remember that when you were on the ballot, you were in their state.
Yep.
Raising money for them.
Yep.
And now they owe you one and they love you.
Yep.
That's how you become like popular in the party.
Yeah.
And become like a real like party establishment, which I hate that word, but that's what that means, is that you raise money for lots of people and they all love you now. And if someone wants your endorsement, they're like, yeah, you fundraised me for me 3 times.
And she
usually you want to be seen doing good.
Yeah.
And then when they're choosing a VP person, they're looking around and going,
oh yeah, we remember you.
They're doing good. Yeah. Oh, Gretchen's doing pretty good in Michigan. Oh, look at Kamala on TV again. That was a good interview.
Yeah.
And they're watching you do good. And it's also important, if you watch those people when they're speaking, most of the time, they're speaking very well of Biden.
Yes.
They're on that interview.
They're stumping for him. They're being
throwing it back to Biden.
Yeah, they're being a surrogate. And that's something that I've been really impressed. Like, so Joe Biden, through his campaign, Kamala Harris for Joe Biden held a conversation with, you know, prominent black leaders, and like this, you know, black doctor. And it just was, again, you know, and Kamala Harris was doing a great job of, like you're saying, bring it back to Joe Biden. And to me, just had clear sort of VP pick. It wasn't, and this is, again, I love Stacey Abrams, but I think like she's young in the sense that, like, I think it's great that she's talking about her list of qualifications and whatnot. Yeah, and that's great for and I think she's doing it because she is young, and I think next time she won't have, I think it's necessary for the conversation for her to be doing it, but it doesn't garner to me a vice president pick.
Well, the thing is, I think what it is that I think she's incredible. She's so incredible.
Yeah.
But she 100% is the biggest gamble of everybody we've listed.
They all she makes me nervous.
They are governors and they have executive experience. And she didn't get that shot because she was stolen from her.
Totally.
But her being the biggest gamble, the reason why that interview I thought was like a little mark against her was that it demonstrated her greenness.
Yeah.
Because it didn't look like a revolutionary. It looked like you're rewriting the script. And that's not your job as VP.
Nope.
So maybe this isn't a good moment to be rewriting scripts.
Yeah.
To demonstrate that you won't be the rewriting the script.
Yeah. Agreed.
Like, you basically are auditioning for VP. So how are you going to behave as VP? Well, you should be doing that right now.
Yep.
And if you're making it about you, that's not being a good VP.
I haven't really heard her boast about Joe Biden. She doesn't bring it back to Joe Biden.
She pivoted. She started to do it because someone gave her the memo. Someone
gave her that note. Girl, it's not about you.
It's not about you right now. That's how you get governor. But you'll be number two. You have to run for them.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to go, I like the way they're running for me.
Yeah.
This is all politics. You know, I would
lean into the things that I've been wanting to also like go off on because, yes. So, no, this has been great and necessary.
We stepped at all the explosive things. We're like, the VP thing I was going to go through like much more measured, and I have like all those talking points about should it be a black woman. And so interesting what Jen Palmieri and Don Brazile had to say about that. And instead, we're like going right into like, but Stacey, though.
Do you see what she said? Did you see?
It's like, oh, Lord, we stepped right into it.
Well, I do, like, I don't know that it necessarily needs, sorry to go back into this, but, like Joe Biden's already got the black vote locked in, so it's not like he needs, like, sort of pander off of, you know, for the black vote.
But counterpoint
on
that. Counterpoint on the black vote is that...
Oh, not take it for granted.
Although he... Don't take it for granted, and there are some studies that show that young voters, specifically young voters of color, and as well as just like voters of color, are actually least motivated by anti-Trump sentiment.
That makes sense.
The most motivated by anti-Trump sentiment are the educated whites with a college degree.
Yeah.
Primarily in the suburbs. Those are the ones we don't have to worry about.
Yeah.
They're going to turn out because they cannot stand Trump and they hate all this.
Yeah.
The ones that may sit home will be young voters, black voters, and young voters of color.
Mm. And seeing a black
those
woman...
Those are the ones that we have to worry about. Right. Even though they don't like him,
yeah.
Are they going to turn out and vote for Biden?
Right.
Even if Biden won them in the primary, doesn't mean that he's going to win enough of them in the general.
That's true. And I do see, I do, even myself, like, again, I love an Elizabeth Warren, but I can see people getting even more electrified. Like the people that you just mentioned being more electrified by just seeing a black woman on the ticket, like what that does. It's Obama all over again. And yes. It sort of, there's a visualness of breaking another glass ceiling that I think will galvanize people to the poll. And also too, black women are the backbone of the Democratic Party. And it literally says like, oh yeah, here's your seat at the table. You should have been here. Sorry, this took so long.
And Biden knows that.
Yeah.
I play this thing, as you said, the fantasy football, like gaming it all out. And it's like, who knows? I'll be happy with any of them when it comes down to it. And maybe because I love her. In my gut, I think it's Kamala.
Me too.
The reason why is I think it's because, frankly, it's obvious.
Yeah.
And in a way, someone just said it and they're like, actually, in a weird way, this is, it's like Biden. It's like down the center, has a very diverse, broad appeal. Slightly exciting, slightly boring.
it's kind of what we need.
And then at the end of the day, completely predictable.
Yeah.
That's Biden.
It's actually...
So, like, it kind of would make sense that he'd be like, you know what? Let's just go with it. I love it. And you know he loves her. So, like, it just makes sense.
Well, and it's, you can roll the tapes. It's in episodes, like, from a year and a half ago, I said, before the primaries even kicked off, I said a Biden-Harris ticket. And then, you know, the primaries happen and you get so excited. And I'm like, oh, I'm back where I started from before all of this even began.
But it's possible that they're going to be worried about the Midwest, and they go. But the thing is, if he were to go with a Gretchen Whitmer, I wouldn't be shocked,
right?
I'd be a little disappointed, and I would be a little bit like,
he played it too safe, I think.
Yeah, we don't want, basically the shadow of Tim Kaine, I think, is hanging over this.
Yeah,
and there's a sense that he can't pick too safe a ticket, and I also think doubling on that. Also an all-white ticket.
Yeah.
I think there's an element of, like, that doesn't look like the future, I think, of the American Democratic Party.
Yeah.
And even though I think if it was a white woman on the ticket, it would be different, I still think, you're right that picking a black woman looks like, boom.
Yeah.
That's America.
Whoa, okay.
You can now see it. And also, people, there's this good symmetry to, oh, wait.
Yeah. No, agreed.
It looks
hands
like
down.
A good symmetry for, like, a young black man picking an old white guy, and then the old white guy picking a young black woman.
Yeah.
It's a great symmetry.
We want to go back to those times.
Of 08.
Yeah. It feels like 08, so I'm with it.
Strange planets, curious technology, and a fantastic vision of the distant future. Featuring Martin Starr.
So we're going on day 14. Shuttle still hasn't come.
Aparna Nancherla.
The security system provides you with emotional security. You do the rest.
Echo Kellum.
Can you disconnect me or not?
Hari Kondabolu.
I'm staying.
From Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, Jeffrey McGivern.
Could you play Cyndi Lauper's Girls Just Want to Have Fun?
It's The Outer Reach. Stories from beyond.
Now available for free at MaximumFun.org or anywhere you listen.
Well, there you go. That is a show for the record books right there. Another great one. So great to have Aneke. And we got to chat with Ben Randall for a bit. Not much on the fact check front. I will say, though, that Susan Rice, y'all remember Susan Rice from the Obama days, has just thrown her hat in the ring saying that she wants to be Joe Biden's vice president. Y'all, you know what? I am not mad at that. And then, honestly, after talking to Ben Randall, just made me realize how much I actually really would love it. I think many of us would. A black female vice president is long overdue. The black community, specifically black women, have been the backbone of the Democratic Party for decades, and they deserve that fucking seat at the table. So I'm not mad at it. Kamala Harris, Susan Rice or Elizabeth Warren. I know she's not black, but you know I love her. I'm not being candid about who I want my VP picks were. I felt like I was very good about the presidency, but here we are. That's what my two cents is. I do want to switch gears and do want to address... this is hard because I want to address it to acknowledge it because my heart breaks over this. But, you know, it was just last week we were talking about the Ahmaud Arbery case. And here it is a week later. It's another incident. And that, you know, with the Ahmaud Arbery, that was 2 months ago. And the only reason why we found out about it is because there was video footage that was leaked. And the guy had only leaked it because he thought it was going to clear his friends. It's a mess. And then you here have Breonna Taylor, a 26-year-old EMT who, you know, has been out in the field helping to front lines of this coronavirus, was asleep in her Kentucky home just after midnight on March 13th when police entered with a search warrant and a drug investigation and opened fire, killing her. And so now there's a lawsuit being filed by her family accusing the officers of wrongful death and excessive force and gross negligence. Now, her boyfriend, who was also there, was firing back because he thought he was being robbed. What else would you think? Who goes in guns blazing, right? And mind you, under Kentucky law, he was well within his rights to not only have that gun, but to defend his household. So what's the rule? Is the rule okay for white people but not for black people? Is that what it is? Because that's what it seems like. So another unarmed black person just can't even be in your home without being murdered. It's terrifying. This is absolutely terrifying to be black in this fucking country, let me tell you. And Sean King is also reporting that we now have confirmed that many of the shots fired from the Louisville police that killed Breonna Taylor were fired from outside the apartment through windows with closed blinds. Bullets from police were found in three different apartments. It's a miracle not more people were murdered and killed. So really, this entire police force should be under investigation. And badges, they should all be let go because they are not equipped to handle the job. Also, it is now believed that the police officer who got shot in the leg in the shooting of Breonna Taylor was actually shot by friendly fire from his own officers. His partners were hospitalized, emptying their clips and fired shots into three different apartments. I mean, ill-trained. You know, I'm watching The Wire right now, finishing it up, and it's one of the greatest shows I've ever watched. Highly recommend. And it just goes to show just how so many of our police forces are just underfunded. They focus so much on stats, so they're just ripping and roaring. They're not really serving and protecting their communities. And they look at black people as criminals. I have to tell you this, with all this stuff that's going on, like, what the fuck? Where's all of our money going towards? All of our taxes? America's supposedly this big, bad country, yeah, on the outside with this big-ass military. But you look at, like, from the inside, we are crumbling from the inside. Our infrastructure, we cannot protect our own people. We're murdering our own people. The people who are sworn to protect are murdering our own people. Our government is letting people die by reopening up the country. We don't have the hospital infrastructure to keep everybody safe. There's a cancer growing in this country, and it has been growing, and this country is literally crumbling apart. You can't build your house on sand. And you got Jeff Bezos being a fucking trillionaire. Like, this isn't working. It's not working. It hasn't been working, and it's literally crumbling before our eyes. You know, I was walking around up in the hills of Hayward, where my mom lives, staying with her right now, and there was like a middle-aged white guy walking where I was walking, and I'm wearing a hoodie, and I gotta tell you, I thought, fuck, this is how it happens. All I need is for this guy to decide I shouldn't be here. I'm up to something. I've done something wrong. I got scared for my life. You know, I see a white guy across the I see a white guy walking and I cross the street because I don't feel safe. I kind of made a post about this on Facebook recently, just kind of, you know, kind of joking, half joking, kind of just putting it out there because there's been this thing in the media about the scary black men, how scary black men are, yada, yada, yada. Hold up. Let's look at the actual facts. black people get murdered, have been murdered by white people in this country for centuries, and it continues to happen today. And it's damn near legalized. And when I posted this, I will tell you this, a slew of people, women, other POCs, all actually agreed that they too have a slight twinge of fear when it comes to white men, who kind of just get away with so much in this goddamn country. And you look at the mass shootings, statistically run the numbers, have been a threat to people of different races, different walks of life in this country. And you have people like Paul Manafort and Michael Flynn who are being released from prison after being traitors to their own country. So the real threat to American democracy, want to point fingers, white dudes. There it is. So my heart goes out to the Taylor family. It's sad. I don't really have a lot of words. I don't want to end on a note like this, but this is just really heartbreaking. We have to do better. Not only we, white people, you got to step it up. You got to step it up. We didn't create this issue as we talked about all the things that black people have had to push through and endure time and time again. It's exhausting and we keep doing it. And then this keeps happening. So raise your kids right. Talk to your uncles. Talk to your grandpappies. Talk to your family members, because it's not my family's doing it. It's not my community's doing it. This needs to stop. So y'all got work to do. All right, well, switching gears, you all know I still teach dance classes Saturdays at 2 p.m. Pacific time on the Zoom. And you can always reach us through the Facebook community group that we have, the Minority Corner Kids Playground. You can tweet at us. Also, we're on Instagram. Get involved in the conversation. We'd love to hear from you. And I hope you're being well. I know you... These times are crazy, they're rough, but we're going to get through this together. And don't forget, we've got an election coming up, so make sure that you have adopted a Senate race or two or three or four, or as many as you can do. Think about how you're going to get involved in this election. It's just 6 months away. Time to get ready. Time to get into the arena, because this could be it, folks. This could be it. Well, I hope you have a great, wonderful week. Let the light shine bright in your life. Don't forget to wash your hands. Be well. And a big thank you to all of those who are out there working, our frontline workers, everybody who's out there. We love you. Thank you so much. And thank you so much for listening to Minority Corner, because together, we're the majority.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.